Members, today, Monday, February 24th, and the time is, I got a loud voice. And the time is 1:02 p.m. I'm calling this meeting of Health, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. And members, we have quorum. Okay. Representative Ryer, have you had a chance to look at the minutes, and would you like to move for their approval?
I have, Mr. Chair, and so moved.
Good. Representative Ryer moves approval of the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those against say nay. The motion prevails, and the minutes are as approved. Thank you. We have a full day, folks. We have a very full day. So just so we can stay on time in each subject area, we're going to have about 15 minutes. And we are starting first on the agenda is an update from Director Ferguson from the Office of Emergency Medical Services. Come on up or down, whatever. Welcome. Welcome, Mr. Ferguson. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Backer, Representative Bierman, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to brief you today on the recent activities of the new Minnesota Office of Emergency Medical Services. I have promised Chair Backer that I will be brief today because you have a lot of bills and a lot of important information to hear. I did want to just provide a brief update. As part of the EMS omnibus bill that was passed at the end of the last legislative session, one of those items was the creation of the new Office of Emergency Medical Services, which transitioned EMS regulatory operations from the former EMS regulatory board to operating more as a traditional state agency. That change became effective on January 1st and has been functioning under that since. Really, one of the biggest changes of that organization structure is where the agency head reports to, as opposed to a 19-member independent board. The governor of Minnesota now appoints that agency head, which at this time is me. We have three different divisions. We have a division dedicated to ambulance service and medical response unit issues, a division dedicated to our EMS providers and to people, and we also have a division that is dedicated to our EMS physicians throughout the state. The law required the appointment of a deputy director to each of those divisions. Two of those deputy positions have been filled by internal promotions within the office, and Saturday morning we actually posted the new state EMS medical director position. That position will remain open for 21 days. As we look to recruit a dedicated physician to help advise the office. Each division also has its own advisory council. They were all required to meet by January 31st. All of those advisory councils had their first meetings and have already provided valuable insight and several ideas which will help us in establishing our new state EMS strategic plan. Really, to date, my goal as the director for the office has been focusing on minimizing disruption and ensuring a smooth transition and trying to build upon the efficient and quality service that had really strengthened in the EMSRB over the course of the last 2 to 3 years. Some other things that were passed in that omnibus bill. One was the $24 million aid program, which sent EMS funding to struggling ambulance services across the state. This was the formula-based model in which 40% of funds were appropriated based on square mileage of the primary service area, 40% based on response volume using a sliding scale to benefit smaller services that lack economies of scale, and then a 20% across-the-board appropriation. All of that funding was dispersed by the Department of Revenue on December 26th. That disbursement process went very smoothly. I want to thank my colleagues at Revenue for making that a smooth process for all concerned. As it relates to that, all of that funding will have to be accounted for. The funding has to be spent by or encumbered by December 31st of 2025, and I anticipate a report coming back to this committee, your colleagues in the Senate, in addition to House and Senate taxes sometime likely in quarter two of calendar year 2026. The breakdown of regional funding, I'll just highlight the top line. This was really dedicated to rural Minnesota. $1 million of that 24 went to qualifying ambulance service within the seven county metro. The remaining $23 million was distributed to the other seven EMS regions throughout Minnesota. The other financial component at the end of the last session was the alternate EMS response model pilot, otherwise known as the Sprint Medic pilot. These were legislatively directed grants totaling $6 million, half of which is going to Otter Tail and Grant County, and then the other half going to St. Louis County. The Otter Tail grant project has an executed grant contract agreement, and they are preparing to begin operations here very shortly. They've spent the last couple of months procuring the necessary equipment and staff in order to operationalize that. And I am still awaiting, hopefully, relatively imminently, a completed grant application from St. Louis County so that then we can begin grant contract negotiations with them, get those funds encumbered, and ultimately that project underway. In terms of future plans and focuses for the office, really focusing on formulating that new state EMS strategic plan with the that the new legislation requires. In addition, trying to support and inform efforts to ensure EMS sustainability across the state and identifying different ways to potentially support the EMS cost of readiness. We do are planning to undertake two small rulemaking projects at this point. One is to update ground ambulance vehicle construction standards, which have not been updated since 1983, in addition to providing some additional medication options for our basic life support ambulance services to give them some additional flexibility, and continuing our work on focusing on the EMS workforce. Trying to quantify different recruitment goals based on a couple of policies that you're going to hear about in various bills presented this afternoon, and continuing to support various EMS education scholarship programs, and also working to protect our workforce by undertaking some data collection efforts related to violence against EMS professionals in the pre-hospital environment. So, Chair Backer, that is the summary of the office's activities that I have for you this afternoon, and I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Members, questions for Director Ferguson? Yeah, Representative Leaving, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments there, and glad to see that things are going well. You mentioned the distribution of the $24 million, and I'm just wondering, do you have available a list somewhere that we can get just to see, you know, where all of it went, who got what? That would be great.
Representative Liebling, I have one hard copy today, which I'd be happy to leave with you. In addition, the certified amounts that were distributed are available on the Department of Revenue webpage, and certainly I'd be happy to provide a copy to the committee administrator for distribution to the members.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, just thank you. I just wanted to say I think probably giving it to the committee administrator would be great. I don't know if other people want to see it, but I think it would be helpful to have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Next on the list is Representative Van Zinbergen. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here today. And I'm just you made in your testimony that you've just brought in a new physician. Can you explain that a little bit more in detail, and what's that person doing?
Absolutely. Chair Backer, members of the committee, as it relates to that position has not been hired yet. It's been posted. That is a position that is required by legislation. The state emergency physicians and the state EMS medical directors were adamant that there needed to be a physician presence within the office to advise leadership on matters related to clinical care. This will not be a full-time position. It'll be a part-time position used on an ad hoc basis to advise on those matters of clinical care and to, you know, advise on new and emerging therapeutics and to provide support to the EMS physicians that serve as medical directors for Minnesota's 266 primary service areas.
Okay. Follow-up?
So this isn't a person that's in the office every day. It's somebody you can access?
Director Ferguson?
That is correct, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Bonner, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to our testifier, Mr. Ferguson. Director Ferguson. So I'm just curious, and I hope you can give me a little clarity. So we just talked about the creation of this brand new office, and you are heading up that work. We've also spoken about a number of new positions that have been created and are in the process of being hired. We also spoke a little bit about a number of subgroups that are specifically tasked with looking at some of the issues longer term, how we create sustainable funding and how we really address some of those gaps that we've seen in Greater Minnesota. I'm curious, we have a number of bills before us today. Can you tell me, are those recommendations from those groups? Are these recommendations from your office? I'm just trying to, because we haven't gotten that far down the road, I'm trying to understand where the bills that are on our schedule today are coming from, if they're recommendations from you or elsewhere.
Director Ferguson.
Chair Backer, Representative, as it relates to the bills that are before you today, none of them come directly from the Office of EMS. None of them come directly from any of the EMS advisory councils that just met for the first time. However, each of the bills, the Office of EMS has offered technical assistance to the various groups that have drafted and worked with these proposals. We have very much been involved in helping craft some of the finer points of language to make sure that anything that ultimately does pass can be administrated and administrated properly. I think that each of the items that these bills are seeking to address have been long-standing issues within emergency medical services. I think that from the testifiers you will hear from later on this afternoon, none of these issues that are on the table became issues overnight. These have been long-standing issues with this particular industry for many years, and it has just kind of culminated into, some would say, an escalating crisis. I think, you know, depending on where you are at within the state, you know, that level of severity can vary, as we're familiar with so many different local services. You know, all politics are local.
Okay. Follow-up?
Thank you for that, Director Ferguson. So what I'm hearing is that none of the bills before us are per se driven by any of the subgroups that have been created recently or by your office. However, they are themes that have been underway for some time or that we've seen before. That said, with all of these groups that are coming forward to take a deeper dive on some of these issues, I assume that the point of some of these subgroups would be to then make recommendations to the legislature on how to better address this. And I guess where I'm headed with this is we know that we didn't get to this crisis overnight, and we know that it's been a long time coming. But I think this is the part where I'm a little bit worried about setting up really long-term funding for something without having more effort to back this up, is that it's sort of that definition of insanity, right? If we keep doing the same thing we've always been doing and we don't actually look at how we address the actual solutions to fix the problem overall at the root, then what we're really doing is potentially creating Band-Aids. And I'm curious if it is your intent that your office and these subgroups will be actually actively diving into these problems and looking for ways to actually fix these issues at the root.
Director Ferguson, and folks, we will have one more rep with questions so we can get on to the first bill of the day. Go ahead. We have one more rep to ask the question. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that, yes, those groups and my office will be taking a more kind of comprehensive view of these issues of sustainability than perhaps what state agency that preceded us really focused on. That being said, I would highlight that there is, there is very much a need to the ambulance services, particularly in rural and outstate Minnesota, facing the workforce shortages that they have and the declining ability to rely on volunteerism. That being said, any proposal is certainly not one that it's impossible to amend or to change at some point in the future. Perhaps a solution which is able to pass through the legislative process today, perhaps we identify a better way in 2 or 3 or 4 years. And I think that's okay. And that's one of the reasons why the office exists, is to evaluate different pilot proposals, evaluate, try new things, and try to identify ways to improve that system. But I would highlight that there very much is a need. What exact path we take, I think, is a matter for discussion. And certainly, there are policy implications of looking at, well, are we just repeating everything that we've already done, or are we trying something new? I think those are fair questions, but I would certainly encourage the overall process that perhaps in some instances a Band-Aid may be required while we work towards something more of a surgical precision or a tourniquet, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Director, for coming in today. And most of the stuff that you're hearing here today, and I just want to put context to it, was a bipartisan group appointed by all caucuses and the governor's office to make changes. And to Representative Bonner's point, we're not definitely doing the same thing over again. This is a whole new world. I got taken off a lot of Christmas card lists because of this whole new world. So I think that we're on that track of what we're looking at, members. The one thing I want to make sure that we really highlight here, and again, I'm not into pumping money at things that we don't know is working or not. The $24 million, as you know, the first ask was for $125 million, but there couldn't be an articulation of where that was going to go. And us as members put it all together to say, well, let's let the locals decide. And the biggest call in our task force was the response time issue. All over the state, we have a response time issue. I now have one in Rosemount that I found out about. It's just not in Representative Backer, Chair Backer's area. And so we have a response time issue. And so I'm looking forward to seeing how that $24 million was spent on that entity, because everybody is having that. And so as members, I think you should have your own ideas of what you would like to see what that was spent on. But I think that's going to be really important before we can commit to ongoing funding. And because I know our areas all need it, I wanted to get to you guys, but I think that we need to look at that. So more of a statement, Chair, but I think we have to get the context to where we're at, too.
I agree. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. And I would ditto. We have worked well together, so it's not just one person leading this charge. It's really several of us working together, and that's what we're supposed to do in St. Paul. So with that, we thank you for your time, Director Ferguson, and we are – next to the first bill on the agenda, the next item on our agenda is House File 337 from Representative Zalistikard. Representative Zalistikard, would you like to move and reinforce? Would you like to? No, would be not. Would you like to move the bill before the committee?
Thank you. Chair Backer, yes.
I'm Representative Zalistikard. I believe you have an A2 author amendment. Would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Chair Backer. And members, I'd like to offer the A2 amendment and move to divide the amendment after line 1.19 and adopt lines 1.2 to 1.19.
19.
Okay, the author would like to make that motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say nay. The motion prevails in lines 1.2 to 1.19 of the A2 are adopted. Representative Zalesikard, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Backer and members. This bill is a continued discussion on rural EMS, Greater Minnesota, and the partnership that took place with Chair Backer and Representative Hewitt and myself in the House, and then we had Senate bipartisan support too, as was noted. And so we continue to try to find solutions. And I appreciate the director's presentation first as we look at that $24 million and then the SPRINT model. As we go forward, we are clear that Greater Minnesota is having an operating deficit. And so what this bill does is it's going to allow us to propose a new coding method and a new pathway to look at facilities that have an operating deficit. There would be a system in place to identify them where they would have their financials audited. And then the larger areas, the 7-county metro, Duluth, Mankato, Rochester, St. Cloud, would be ineligible for grants when we develop this as it continues to become shaped on what the best pathway forward. So, you know, we're going to continue to work on this, and just wanted to present to you that we have not arrived, to Representative Hewitt's point, on solving all the issues and solutions. We know we have to not do a Band-Aid, but have something that's lasting and that's long-term and that is going to be reasonable and make sense. And so today, just letting you be aware, members, that we are looking at having some type of a grant program that would identify that as we move forward.
Okay, so we're going then. Thank you. Thank you, Representative. We're going to turn it over to testifiers. Each testifier we have right now, five for House File 337. First on deck is Eric Simonson. After Eric is Mike Warner. And then Tim Myers after that. So 2 minutes. Yes, even to an ex-senator, or should say senator, only gets 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Eric Simonson, and I represent the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. That's an organization of about 115 cities all outside the 7-county metro area. House File 337, as amended, picks up where last session's one-time aid bill left off. We said we wanted to come back this session with a longer-term solution, and we want to thank Representative Zalesnikar, Chair Backer, Representative Hewitt, and so many others around this committee that helped us get to this point over the interim. House File 337 addresses several concerns we have heard over the past 2 years of working on this particular challenge. Number one, it addresses the operating deficits so many Greater Minnesota licensed ground ambulance services are facing annually to no fault of their own. Two, it provides a clean formula using data provided to the state that distributes grant dollars only where they are needed. Three, it provides clear guidelines on what the grant dollars can be expended for. And it provides the clarity that the Office of Emergency Medical Services can perform audits of grant applications. It addresses the uncompensated care problem for ambulance services. It addresses the cost of readiness within the operational costs. And it provides reporting back to the legislature in the interest of accountability and transparency. We know, based on the 2023 reporting period, that non-metro services reported deficits totaling more than $30 million when you use the formula within this bill. This bill resolves a challenge over 20 years in the making. As rural Minnesota ages, the payer mix trends even more to Medicare, Medicaid, and we know those reimbursements are trending well below 40%. Mr. Chair, members, by splitting the amendment, we don't have a revenue source yet, and I think that's okay. The bill as amended right now creates a policy and develops a fund within the OEMS that would collect revenues at some future time. We recognize that that conversation needs to continue going forward, and we are happy to be a part of that conversation, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Mike Warner, you're next, then Tim Myers, and then Nathaniel Zacharias is after that. 2 minutes, please. Please state your name and your two-minute testimony. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Warner, and I'm the fire chief for the City of Red Wing Fire Department. And I'm here to testify today in support of House File 337 as amended. The City of Red Wing owns and operates around the clock an advanced life support transport ambulance within our PSA, primary service area. We cover approximately 226 square miles, with 46 of that being inside of the city proper, and the remaining in the surrounding township areas and rural areas. In 2024, we responded to 3,818 ambulance calls. Furthermore, 233 of those were in the rural areas. Our payer mix for Red Wing is 72% government funded, with the remaining being private and or self-pay. The challenge with the government funded is only able to collect about a quarter of the actual cost. Due to our payer mix, there's a general operating shortfall which requires subsidies from the City of Red Wing taxpayers to all other residents or other people who are visiting our area. City is very appreciative of the one-time emergency aid funding that Red Wing received, and we'll be more grateful for the sustainable solution for House File 337. I'd like to thank you, Representative, for authoring this bill. Thank you, Chair and members for the committee and following for this testifying.
Thank you. Thank you there, Mr. Warner. Tim Myers next, and then on deck is Nathan Zacharias, and then finally, Kevin Lee. Go ahead, Tim, please. State your name and your testimony. Go ahead.
My name is Tim Meyer. Good afternoon, Chairman Backer, members of the committee. I'm the Senior Director for Sanford Ambulance. We operate ambulances in Moorhead, Thief River Falls, Bagley, Wheaton, Worthington, Laverne, and Canby. And my organization supports House File 337. The bill provides a structure to support rural EMS in Minnesota for those agencies that cannot generate enough revenue to fully support their operations. There's been a widening gap between revenues and expenses for all ambulance services, and those that have low volumes are particularly at risk. The volunteer staffing model that has been the backbone of rural EMS in our country has been in transition for some time now. Less people can or want to volunteer. These pressures have forced many rural ambulance services to pay their staff. They had to cover their schedule. Adding labor costs has a huge impact to a low-volume EMS agency. Without financial support like this bill provides, the long-term viability of many services is in jeopardy. If an ambulance service fails, the service area that is uncovered becomes a burden of the neighboring ambulance services. That increases their economic pressures and results in a cascading problems from one agency to another. We have to attract more people to join the EMS workforce. That will take increased training opportunities, strong local leadership, and we have to pay people to do this work. The EMS industry needs legislative support. Lives really depend on it. Thank you for considering funding a funding structure to ensure the viability of ambulance coverage in rural Minnesota, and I ask you pass House File 327 to support rural EMS, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Myers. Next, Nathaniel Zacharias, and then finally, Kevin Lee. Please state your name and 2 minutes for your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Backer and members of the committee. My name is Nathan Zacharias, and I'm the Technology Policy Analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. I'm here today to offer AMC's support for House File 337. We have a strong interest in reliable and quality ambulance services for every community in Minnesota. We know that EMS providers struggle with rising operation costs, staffing shortages, and insufficient reimbursement rates. Counties, community boosters, and other local governments have stepped up to close some funding gaps where they can. However, we do need a long-term sustainable funding model to ensure the continued viability of EMS services across the state. Without adequate funding, we risk losing these critical services, which would have a devastating consequence for communities across the state. And that's why we believe House File 337 is so important. This bill represents funding certainty and a guarantee from the state that Minnesotans can continue to rely on these essential services. And I'll just close by saying thank you to Representative Zeleznikar for carrying this legislation, as well as Chair Backer, Representative Hewitt, and other members of the EMS Task Force and members of this committee for your hard work over the last few sessions that has really helped start these important conversations. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. We have then finally Kevin Lee. State your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kevin Lee, and I am the EMS Relationship Specialist for North Memorial. North Memorial Health is a nonprofit healthcare system that operates hospitals in Robbinsdale and Maple Grove. We also have several clinics, and we have one of the largest EMS systems in the state of Minnesota. I've been with North for 25 years, and I've spent my entire career in Greater Minnesota. I spent 15 of my years at North as the district chief for our Brainerd region. Our ground ambulance service covers 8,183 square miles across Greater Minnesota. This does not include our metro operation. Over the years, we have observed growing trends of smaller ambulance services, including municipal ambulance services, transitioning their ownership to larger providers like North Memorial. This shift occurs because many smaller services are struggling to sustain operations due to financial and staffing challenges. One of the primary financial challenges we face is stagnant Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement rates, which remain our main sources of income. Additionally, rising staffing costs present a significant burden as we must ensure 24/7 coverage. The days of relying on volunteers or on-call personnel to staff ambulances are behind us. While EMS and subordinate taxing districts may provide solutions in some areas, many communities lack the tax capacity to subsidize their local ambulance services. This model also shifts the financial burden onto cities and counties, further straining local resources. In 2024, the legislature took an important first step by allocating $24 million in ambulance sustainability funding. However, ongoing state funding is essential to maintain ambulance services across Greater Minnesota in the long term. Minnesotans rightfully expect a rapid response during medical emergencies, regardless of their location. Ensuring a strong, sustainable EMS system must remain a priority. Please support House File 337. Thank you for your time, and I can answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you there, Mr. Lee. Now we open up to questions. I'm looking for us to do anywhere max 10 minutes of questions here so we can get on to the other bills. First on deck is Representative Purcell. You have the floor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I have a question to the bill author. So I have two communities in my district which straddle counties, so and one of the counties is considered a metro county. So Northfield has part in Dakota County, and New Prague has half in Scott County. So on lines 2.31 and 2.32 of the bill, where it just talks about, you know, calls out specific communities that are not eligible, and then looking at the metropolitan county, this is an issue when we look at particular taxes in metro counties. So I'm just wondering how this would apply, for example, in my district. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Zeleznikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Purcell. I'm going to defer to one of the testifiers because they have all that data.
Please state your name and
I knew you'd do it.
And proceed answering.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. It's an excellent question. The way the bill is drafted, it's for communities that have their PSA that is mostly outside of the metropolitan area. So if you're straddling that seven-county metro line, if you are mostly outside, the way it's written now, that they would be eligible for grants, assuming they had an operational deficit.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know, so New Prague is divided directly down Main Street, half in Lee Seward County and half in Scott County. Do you know where their PSA would be located, for example, if this were to become a problem? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Simonson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, excellent question. I don't know off the top of my head, but it's something that we could definitely take a look at.
Okay. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And would it be okay if we bring Mike Werner back up, the chief?
Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead, Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair, Chief Werner, and to the author, if you can answer it also. Over and over again in the task force, we heard the cry by local mayors, city councils, county commissioners, that because of the way our EMS system is organized in Minnesota called primary service areas, they have very little local control. In many cases, our local control or the PSAs are owned by private entities, which you heard from two of them today. This is a good system, but it probably needs to be enhanced. The reason I brought you back up, Chief, is your city owns your PSA. Local control is really important to your city because if something goes wrong, that mayor is going to hold you, Chief, responsible. Is that right?
Mr. Werner.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. Yes, that is correct. If something goes wrong, our city council and mayor will hold me responsible, yes.
So what I'm, Mr. Chair, sorry, what I'm concerned about in this bill, and I think we all, because some of you around the table here have been city council and have been mayors, is the concern over that local control issue, and this bill does not give that. It does not award the purse strings is how government, or that's how we control, right, through the purse strings. And this bill does not give it to it. It automatically awards a grant, which, like last year when we had emergency grants going out, I understand that. But as we move into a total funding mechanism for EMS, and it's great because you're a fire person too, which has easily been funded through the years. I don't know what you guys got on them. But anyways, EMS is now coming into a public safety entity, which I think everybody around this table recognizes. And so with that, we want local purse strings. We're hearing way too much about fraud, waste, and abuse, right? And we can't have that happen in this space because we don't have the volumes to do that. So it would make sense that the local control is set at the local city councils, government, and stuff like that. And Representative Zlicikar, I don't see that in the bill. And again, I was really optimistic. What you started with today was that we need to work a little bit more on this. And I think your bill can get there, but we also need it. And then my other concern definitely is my colleagues on that have already talked about this. Metro is hurting now too. Yes, we had to go to outstate right away with those grants we had to give, and I was totally supportive of that. But we have a metro problem. Any of you in this room today could get in an accident on 94 and have a response time issue. I care about everyone in this room. I worked in this space. We need to look at this as a statewide problem. And I get it. Outstate is hurting a little bit, but we need to look at this as a global issue. And for that reason, I think we still need to send this bill back and do a little bit more work on it. And I'm looking forward to working with you, Representative, on it.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Ryer, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. My question is about funding, which I know you took out in the amendment, but currently ambulance services can receive funds through a problematic method called revenue recapture. And so my question is, as you look at replacing with an additional new system, if you would be including rescinding that as part of your legislation. Thank you.
Representative Zlicikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative. We're at the beginning stage of looking at all options. So, you know, the reality is we did a Band-Aid approach for an issue coming out of the pandemic and dealing with the $24 million for the ambulances and then the $6 million for the Sprint model. We've toured the state, the representatives in the room here and with the senators, but the reality is we have not fixed it for a long-term sustainable thing. So we are going to overturn every rock to look at the best approach, to Representative Hewitt's point, the best pathway forward that gives us the best chance for success, for making sure that regardless of where you live, that if you need an ambulance, it's going to be able to get there in a timely manner. And so that's all open for discussion right now as we, you know, move to get this in the right order. But that's we're going to be looking at everything for sure.
Follow? Okay, good. Okay, any last closing statements, Representative Zalesikar?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. I think we all acknowledge that we have an issue for trying to have a solution that's long-term, that's sustainable. And finding the right pathway forward is going to take some further conversations. And so this is an intro today to the concept of what we want to do as we move forward. And I look forward to working with the EMS members that have been working with me on for the last 2 years, and I was working with them and other members too, if you have ideas, so that we can get the best for greater Minnesota and look at the issues for the entire state, so that whatever we do, it is the best path forward, and I think we can get there. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Zalesikar. Members, with that, House File 337 is laid over as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right.
Okay, next on deck is is House File 36. Representative Hewitt, after you get yourself situated, would you like to move your bill before the committee?
Yes, I would, Chair.
So moved. Great. Thank you. Members, the intent is to lay this bill over for possible inclusion also. Representative Hewitt, will you please present your bill?
Thank you, Chair Backer and members. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this bill today. I would have brought snacks, but I was busy. This actually is not a foreign bill to me, as when I was not a legislator, my company sent me up here to talk about this. What special medical transport is, if you don't know, for members that are maybe lost in this space, this is everything that the ambulance don't take. This is the people sitting up on the floor at the hospital that are vulnerable people that need to be moved either from the hospital to their next place, either home or maybe the nursing home or assisted living, or sometimes to dialysis or sometimes to clinic appointments. Special trans, and I call it special trans, it's non-emergent medical transport is what the official title is, has been a thorn in the side of this legislature for years, because the amount we're paying them just is not sustainable. On and on again, we have had to struggle with this because you look at it, you have to have qualified employees with qualified background checks. You have to train those employees because they're working with vulnerable adults. You have to also pay them so they stay there, because a good employee gets better at this as they go along. And then you have to buy vehicles that are not cheap. These vehicles have to be well-maintenanced, again, if they have lifts and stuff. So the cost that our providers are having in this space is just going to knock them out of the state. And this isn't a simple service that you can just set up an Uber app on and take care of. And everybody in this room, and I know Representative Backer knows this personally because he's the one that gets called to that local hospital when they can't find somebody to transport these people in the middle of the night to take them back to the home, and that is a freebie because you cannot transport a wheelchair person in an ambulance, but because he's local and because he loves his community, he takes that patient, and I've done the same over and over. I know North Memorial, I know Alina, I know all the big services in this room have done the same thing over and over again. This is part of the problem with our ambulance services right now, is because they have to take these patients free to the homes, and it's burning out our members. So saying that, this basically is an increase. It looks at the base rate, and it looks at the mileage charge. With that, I stand for members' questions. There is a testifier if we have technical questions in the room. This bill also needs work. Thank you for laying it over, Chair, because mental health transport is included in this, as well as the indigenous population has called me, and they're not included in this, and we got to look at that too. So I have a lot of work to do, and I'm hoping this committee steps forward if this bill needs to be sweetened up or done with something, and I'm more than open to changing it. Thank you, Chair.
Good. Members, we'll open up for questions.
Oh, I love it.
All right. Okay, great. We could not get him off hook. Right, so, Mr. Representative Liebling, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please drill him.
Thank you. I just couldn't let Representative Hewitt go without any questions. So, sure. Representative Hewitt, I know this has been a big issue for a long, long time. Could you just give us an idea of how you arrived at the rates that are in the bill?
That is a great
question. Go ahead, Representative
Hewitt. I'm sorry.
No, sir.
This is where I'm going to phone the help, because we all bring people into discussing this when we write a bill like this. And I would like to bring up an advocate in the room. Who is my, well, I see people leaving the room, but.
No one's going to be your friend today to represent you.
I'm off Christmas card list, and now I got people running out on me. Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I will check with the advocates on this. It is a substantial raise that they came up with here, and I think we have to dig through it. And actually, to be honest with you, I think that when we do an EMS fix, this is going to be part of that fix. We can't just keep going back to Medicare, Medicaid, and looking at this, because this has a big factor on, if you ever heard the word throughput and flow at hospitals, we have people waiting in hospitals for 4 to 5 days because we can't move them out. If we can't move those beds clear on the floors, we can't put patients out of the ER. So this is more than just a simple Medicare, Medicaid fix. This is a bigger fix, and I think we have to look at this as a global issue. But to Mr. Chair, and to the Chair's question, I will have to get back to you, and I will get you the report.
Okay, thank you. We have one more question from Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Representative Hewitt. The governor, I was looking and I can't find it yet, but I know that the governor made some proposals on NEMT. And can you kind of compare your approach? And I'm sorry, I literally can't find it in the budget proposal right now, but I'm sure you know it. Can you tell me the differences between what the governor is proposing and how your bill would impact that?
It's a similar bill. The rates are different. And then I think the governor also maybe had missed some stakeholders also that I also missed. So there isn't much different. It's again, this, like Chair Liebling said, this has been around forever, and we've been trying to push this. But here again, it's like a broken record. We have to find another mean. And I know the governor's open to talking more about this, because it's such, the hospitals call about this all the time. The ambulance services call about this all the time. We need to do something. Is this the fix? It's a bandage at best. So I appreciate the question, Vice Chair Nadeau, but it's not much different other than the same groups that I probably left out, he left out too.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hewitt, any final last words?
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Okay, great. So, members, thank you, and this bill is laid over. Next on the agenda is House File 93, and Vice Chair Nadeau will take the gavel.
All right, Representative Backer, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Chair Nadeau.
Members, the intent is to lay this bill over for possible inclusion as well. To your bill, Representative Backer.
Yeah, thank you. House File 93 adds additional grant money for training. It actually, what it does is establish an earn while you learn grant program to be administered by our new EMS office. Students are employees and earn a livable wage while training to become an EMT. One of the challenges that we have, this is not just new to EMS, is getting EMTs into the pipeline. If we don't have people in the pipeline, then at 2 a.m, you see older folks like me showing up when you need help in my PSA or other PSAs. Where does this target? It targeted it to ambulance services, that has at least 50% of their staffing is EMTs and so forth. Because we know if people become EMTs, then we also have folks to become paramedics and put more people in the pipeline. Because obviously when you or your loved ones need an ambulance, we need to get the rig out of the door. Rigs are nice, but we need someone, A, to drive, and B, of course, back in the back of the rig. So with that said, and the goal is to provide employment to 100 individuals yearly as an entry point into EMS. So with that, we have two fine testifiers, one to my left, one to my right. You guys can arm wrestle who to go first. No, I think we have Tyler to go first. Go ahead, Chair Nadeau.
Thank you, Representative Backer. We are going to start with Tyler Bowes. Please state your name and start your testimony. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Backer and members of the committee. My name is Tyler Boss, and I am a EMT for Mayo Clinic. I want to take this moment to share my journey and how I got here and why I chose this path. Like many people, I didn't always know what I wanted to do in my life. I spent several years delivering pizza. I learned my way around town. I realized that I wanted more, a career that I could make a real impact in people's lives. And I can make things that truly matter. The idea of becoming an EMT excited me, but my path wasn't straightforward. The first time I tried to take an EMS course, it actually ended up getting canceled due to enrollment. That was frustrating, but it didn't change my determination. I knew that this was what I wanted to do, so when I seen the sign to earn as I learn, I took the chance, and I'm grateful that I did. The class itself was one of the most impactful experiences of my life. Learning these life-saving skills was eye-opening, but really made a difference. Being able to earn a full-time wage while training wasn't just helpful, it was essential. It allowed me to fully immerse myself in the learning process without constantly worrying about making ends meet. And having full-time hours meant that I was gaining hands-on experience at a steady pace, reinforcing my knowledge and making me more confident in my abilities. One of the most rewarding parts of this journey is that I get to serve my community as an EMT. These aren't just the streets on a map to me. These are the neighborhoods where I spent my childhood, where I made lifelong friends and family. And now I have the privilege of giving back to the people that shaped me. The journey to becoming an EMT wasn't easy. Training tested my endurance and my knowledge and my ability to act under pressure, but it also showed me that I am capable. I know that this is the beginning, and there will be many challenges, difficult calls, and moments that test me, but every time I help someone, every life I touch will remind me why I chose this path. This is my journey, and I'm honored to begin. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm sorry I said your last name wrong.
Oh, that's okay.
And we're now Dan Anger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. And thanks for the opportunity to address you today. I know there's a lot of workforce challenges and funding, so I appreciate that. My name is Dan Anger, and I started my EMS career back in 1986. At a volunteer service, and I'm currently filling the role of Director of Education and Training for Mayo Clinic Ambulance. To enforce our recruitment and retention efforts, we strongly support this grant, this proposal. This initiative provides, you know, participants with livable wages as they complete their journey, and also ensures that we're meeting the needs of local EMS agencies. In August of 2024, Mayo Clinic Ambulance launched a similar program, an Earn As You Learn initiative, to assess the feasibility. Was this right for us? Was it beneficial? Did it pay dividends at the end? And the answer to that is unequivocally yes, it did. We specifically targeted Austin and Albert Lea regions whose staffing had fallen to 60%. And we advertised through local things like social media, but most effectively probably a little sign out in the yard in front of the ambulance service, right where Tyler and his brother saw the sign, with a brochure attached to it to say, hey, give us a call, we got a job for you. The success of our Earn As You Learn program underscores the potential impact of such a program. We selected 8 candidates of over 40 applicants in the Austin-Albert Lea area, so there is interest out there. All 8 candidates, I'm pleased to say, we called them the Great 8 when they were enrolled in the program, completed their National Registry exam, and have accepted full-time positions at Mayo Clinic Ambulance. This pilot program has demonstrated this value by providing highly capable EMTs in the Austin-Albertley area, and they're nearly fully staffed because of these 8 students. Solved our staffing needs there. We have not done that before at Mayo Clinic that easily. We've gone to high schools. We've done recruiting events. Earn as you learn paid dividends. It enhances recruitment. It creates a path, just like Tyler shared, where people that want to change careers can now do that while paying their bills and supporting their family. It boosts retention because it fosters loyalty for those people that are paying them to train. It fosters loyalty to hopefully keep them on at the organizations where they train. It impacts communities. It finds those that are suffering with staffing shortages and lessens those impact and fills those gaps. But I think it's mostly it's proven successful for us. The high pass rate and retention efforts for our course demonstrates that we'll continue to do this again. We know at Mayo Clinic that it pays dividends to do this program and think it would have the same impact statewide. So we urge your support in this vital program and help the EMS agencies across Minnesota become stronger and have a more sustainable EMS workforce. Thank you. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. And there's no more testifiers. Is there anybody in the room that wants to testify on this bill? All right, let's turn it over to member questions. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to say that thank you for bringing this forward. I'm such a strong supporter of helping the workforce get filled through a Grow Your Own program. I think it's great. My question is this ongoing funding or is this just the biennium? It's not clear.
Sorry, Representative Backer.
Thank you for calling on me, Chair. The goal would be ongoing, of course, where this is appropriation of $750,000 in the fiscal year of 2026 and in 2027. So our goal is to do it. You know, a good example, my nephew right now, Michael Backer, he's taking to be a volunteer EMT, but we don't have pay as you go. So he works during the day and then at night twice a week they're doing training for, I think it's going to be for nearly 3 months. So it'd be nice to see ongoing here. It's great to hear success stories because we want to impact lives, and I'm a big believer that's what government needs to do is help with public safety, and this is public safety. So
thank you. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then my question is, we've seen what's happened with hourly wages over the last number of years, and so I'm concerned about having an hourly rate in statute, especially if this were to go on for multiple years. So just a point for consideration.
Point well taken.
Representative Backer.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, we're tugging right now, playing tug of war. So point well taken, thank you.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Chair Backer, and I guess this is a great program. I totally support it. I've known about the Mayo program, and it's wonderful to hear it's got successful return on it. We've tried this in public safety with law enforcement. We have a whole law enforcement class that we funded last year that are now going through and going to become sworn officers sometime in July. So I'm excited about these kind of initiatives. Going to, I'm sorry, are you a director of training? Or
director of education training, yes,
okay.
Sir.
So, Mr. Chair, to the trainer's question, and he's sitting right where I got my training. I was a volunteer, and then I went on to a full-time service. Is there a stipulation that's in this that, or do you guys have a stipulation at Mayo that you have to give so many years back once they do your training, pay you to do this, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Anger.
Thank you, sir. Yep, I appreciate being a volunteer. Started out in a small town myself, so I appreciate that. We do not contract employees. We think it's mutually beneficial not to contract after the program is done. I'll say why. We feel at Mayo Clinic it was a 10-week interview. Because you can pass an EMT program with flying colors doesn't mean you're maybe great for the job. Maybe you don't have the professional courtesy and people skills that are also needed along with the technical skills. However, when we were training our EMTs, we really We're fostering good relationships between our students and our active workforce. So we built this bond, and they grew that way. Maybe they didn't want to work for us after they were done. It allowed them an outlet. I would encourage each agency that trains to determine whether they want a contract or not. We chose not to, and it was beneficial in this situation because we did interview 20-something applicants for that. So we had a fairly of 40 applicants. So we had a fairly robust interview process to see if they met the needs of our Mayo Clinic values and EMS values.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And kind of following on along those lines of what you testifiers were just talking about, the timeline was a question I had. But also I think about the location as you're building workforce across the state. Are there other programs that are out there where we're already building programs for EMTs? I know high schools have programs, and I'm just wondering how well those types of places are doing in reinforcing the need out there. And then are there any that require EMTs to go to a specific location or an area where they are really short? If you could comment on that, both you and Chair Backer, please.
Representative Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. You know, I'm not aware on the western part of Minnesota that we have, you know, earn while you learn, okay? We have programs out there right now. For example, my nephew is taking EMT class that our service is paying for the training, okay? That's paying for the training, $1,500, whatever it is, to $1,800. But he's not getting paid for taking that training. So I'm not familiar with that at all. On the western part, if you can comment.
Thank you. I am aware that there are other Earn As You Learn programs out there. This isn't the first time it's been done. I can't tell you exactly where those are, but I've heard about that not only in Minnesota but across the nation. Volunteer programs such as the high school programs, of course, train people to be volunteers. And again, as we've heard in testimony, volunteerism is a significant challenge in EMS. I think what we did is we identified by our staffing needs regions and put a radius around Albert Lea and Austin, a 40-mile radius, and pinpointed those applications to people that were in that community because we thought if they're in that community, they're vested in the community and will stay in the community once they're trained. So training people to work, like Tyler, who said, I learned the streets of Austin by delivering pizzas. Oh, great. You don't need the ambulance mapping systems to do it. You know the city very well. And you have, you know, community and commitment there too. So that's how we did it. We regionalized. We took our trainers to those locations, and the students traveled to us at one of the headquarters to train. Could be mimicked across the state.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was it for my questions.
Yeah, thank you. Finally, Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all for being here. Chair Backer, I love this bill, actually. I do have one question and possibly a follow-up here. I know that times have really changed, from the days of when my grandfather and father were on the Bloomington Rescue Squad, and I don't think anyone would argue they're a small city anymore. But one of the things I've heard when I've been on ride-alongs is that there is a real hunger for the folks who are doing the work on the front lines, that they need fresh recruits to come in behind them, so I appreciate that. My real question here is, I guess, twofold. One, we had put out some funding back there that was issued last year for EMS, and I'm wondering if any of that funding that we initiated already could go towards some of what we're talking about here, or if any of the training we're talking about here might be covered by other grant funding. And I will tell you, that's not a gotcha question. My main reason for asking is because we know it takes a little time and money to set up grant programs. And so I just wondered if there was a way for us to get to the same place, but make sure we keep as much funding on the actual bottom line. That's why I asked that. And the second is, you had mentioned that this might be scalable out in other places. And I would love to explore that further. Well, I know we're in the metro area. I used to represent Osseo, for example, and I know that being a very tiny little city, this was something that would probably be of great benefit to a small city like Osseo, even though they're within sort of that metro core. They really just would lack the resources to be able to do this on their own. So I'd love to explore whether or not that's possible too. Those are my questions.
Representative Backer, briefly.
I'll take the second one first. You know, in the bill right now, as it is, all ambulance services that have at least 50% EMTs are eligible for this. Okay, so it is not a geographic type of thing. So that's there. And in regards with the funding, you know, we gave a lot of when Representative Hewitt and I worked on and others last year on that funding. We gave a lot of flexibility to those services getting the money. I know one service in particular, they ran a volunteer service, and what they decided to do was raise their call time from $2 an hour to $5 an hour, okay, as a volunteer. So there are funds out there, and there are services that use that for recruiting perspective, like our service, Browns Valley, I think we got around $43,000, $44,000. A little hard to do that, but we're using those funds for training purposes too, but not earn as you learn. There's just not all those resources. So there are some services that got a larger just because of their number of calls and stuff like that and below 100,000. So they have that flexibility. Have I heard any of those services doing that? No. And if I'm wrong, Director Ferguson, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't heard any doing or earn your learn from the money of last year.
At this point, we have not received any preliminary reports. I would be unable to answer that okay. definitively, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Follow-up, Representative Bonner.
Just briefly, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Becker. I just want to say thank you for this bill. I really appreciate it. I love the concept of earn while you learn. I think it could be a really valuable tool for our EMS folks across the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, seeing no further discussion, Representative Backer, do you have a closing for your bill?
It's good to keep folks into the pipeline, so when people need that help and dial 911, you get good folks like Tyler here. So thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you. Representative Backer, House File 93 is laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Next up, members, is House File 94. Representative Backer, please move your bill before this committee.
I so moved this bill, House 94, and I have also an amendment that I would like to add to get it into the shape.
Move the adoption of your amendment.
And just real quick, what that amendment does is it changes the eligible services of those who have 4,000 runs or fewer per calls. The original one had 5,000 and so forth.
I'll move adoption of the A1 amendment.
Okay, thank you.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Now, continue, Representative Backer.
Okay, so with the bill in front of us, basically what this does is it helps with reimbursement costs for ambulance services for the initial education costs and continuing education costs of volunteer ambulance services, just like I did prior. Right now, my nephew's going through the process of being an EMT in the Browns Valley Ambulance Service. So it allows us to put adds 100,000 to the current 361,000 that we have, and it also adds EMR training. Prior to this, it was EMTs. Just for those EMRs is what is your first responders, then folks like me get additional training, EMTs, and then like Tyler, who's a paramedic, gets even more training. So this also includes EMRs, because what we're seeing is more and more services running an EMR with an EMT. I think in the last 10 years, I have only served once or twice with another EMT. We're just running EMRs. And then, of course, the person with the EMT or paramedic is in the back of the rig. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my testifier, and then we can go from there. Cool.
Thank you, Representative Becker.
Please introduce yourself and start your testimony. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, Buck McAlpin on behalf of the Minnesota Ambulance Association. And I think to a few questions earlier with some of the other bills, our Legislative and Workforce Committee of the Ambulance Association has worked pretty hard off some of the work and legislation passed the last few years. And one I think is real important to comment on that wasn't in this committee but went through higher ed is the paramedic scholarship. And this legislature put about $5 million into that. There's a report that just came out from higher ed that over 300 scholarships have been issued. And these are young folks like Tyler that become an EMT, want to move up to be a paramedic, the higher level of care. And they can get up to a $5,000 grant twice for $10,000. And over 100 new paramedics are finishing that program this year and getting out into our workforce. And higher ed's been really promoting that and working on that. So we've really put some thought around, and I think Representative Bonner, you asked this question too, about how we're targeting this money and what we're doing with it. Because one thing Representative Hewitt and Backer, and you guys did this last year, and we changed some of our requirements to operate an ambulance in rural Minnesota, is we allow the first responder driver. And that wasn't included in this funding bucket in House File 94. It was just emergency medical technicians. So by doing that, in this bucket also at times, some bienniums would have an overage of funding. And working with Mr. Ferguson, Director Ferguson in the EMS division, we didn't want that money to surrender back to the general fund. So although you'll see an ask for additional funding in this bill, it is funded at $361,000 a year is what comes to us to put into this program. So I know there's tough budget decisions always made in this committee, but we'd also like to say the policy language is really important in this bill as we use some of this funding to train some of the emergency medical responders, which have become a really key part to funding rural EMS. And we'd appreciate your support with it because it's been a really good tool. And the EMS office, back to the current regulatory board, always manages program quite well.
Thank you. Are there any other members from the public who would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I will close public testimony and I will open it up to member questions. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Chair Nadeau. A question perhaps for the bill author. So that change from 5,000 to 4,000, are there certain communities then that that excludes? Is that why the change and how does that connect to then the dollar amounts in the bill? Thank you.
Representative Backer.
Yeah, good question. Thank you, Representative Purcell. The focus of this bill is to help volunteer services. Okay, when you look at 5,000, it takes 365 days. That basically means that service is getting nearly 14 runs a day. That is not a volunteer service. So even, but I also recognize that there are services out there that the primary crew is paid, backup crew is volunteer. So that seemed to me more reasonable because what I don't want to do, this is more targeted for those smaller communities that are gaining anywhere from maybe under 200-300 runs a year because they're the ones that are struggling with getting reimbursements with some of the training. And again, my goal is if we can help them with training, then they can help with the rigs because a volunteer service 2 years ago, we got a rig. We were at 180, 190,000. That takes us 20 years putting aside $5,000 a year roughly to get to that point. So that was the reason to lower that, to really focus, and I thought $4,000 was very reasonable. I would have loved to go a lot lower, but also after talking to folks in the industry, that just seemed to be make sense for especially those services that have a volunteer as their crew, second crew or third crew, and so forth. So that's why.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Chair Nadeau. Is there a place where I can find out? So I maybe represent the largest community that still has a volunteer force in Northfield. So is there a place that you can direct me? Because I would be so interested in what the numbers are in my town or if there's an expert who can follow up with me, I would love that information. Thank you.
Representative Backer.
Yeah, what I'm going to do is I'm going to phone, not this second, but later we'll phone Director Ferguson. He is a data animal, so he would have all that data. So we'll make sure myself or him will get you that information because he knows that stuff. If I need data on EMS in Minnesota, I phone Director Ferguson. And so he's seen that quite a few times, and he will continue to see that. So thank you.
Thank you. Any further member discussion? Seeing none, Representative Backer, would you like to close on your bill?
Yeah, we have a theme today, not just an EMS day, but obviously to get people in, to keep folks in the pipeline, volunteer, paid, so when people need that 911 service, you or your loved one, there's good folks with good training that is responding and so forth. There's a lot of people who do, there's quite a few people who want to do it, but we want to make sure we give them that training they need so they can feel confident when that rig is pulled out of the garage. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Backer. House File 94, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Last bill on the calendar, on our agenda today is House File 715. Representative Backer, please move your bill before this committee.
I would move this bill before this committee, Chair.
And you have an A1 author's amendment as well.
Yes, I would like to get the bill.
Would you please move adoption of that bill?
Yes.
Of that amendment?
Yes, so moved. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. To your bill as amended, Representative Backer.
I'm just glad we have such an efficient chair up there right now, folks. So with that said, this is nothing new. Anybody that has served on this committee, I know Representative Hewitt has talked about it. I have. That other body across the street has also talked about it. We know for a fact that ambulances do not get reimbursed at the rate that they should. We know that for a fact. That's why our service and several other services will do fundraisers. We do a pancake sausage feed. Always the Hunter's openers in November. Of course, people are invited to come out and so forth. But the challenge that we have at the end of the day, doesn't matter if it's a volunteer service, if it's a large service or intermediate, we are not getting the reimbursement rates that we need to sustain our ambulance services across the state. This is one of the reasons last year we put $24 million into the system. We knew that was literally not even a Band-Aid. We were just putting direct pressure on it for and so forth just to stop the bleed. So this starts to look into it. It doesn't bring us up. I think we would need an increase of closer to maybe 30%. To bring it, maybe, who knows? But we are not going to be able to get that with that budget here. So that's why we put an amendment of 10%. And with that said, I am going to turn over to our testifier.
Thank you, Representative Backer. Please introduce yourself and start your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, Buck McAlpin here on behalf of the Minnesota Ambulance Association. Again, this is another issue that we've talked about, and I think to Representative Hewitt's earlier comments about non-emergency transportation also is that's still kind of a target looking at what that right number is. And him and Representative Zalesnikar worked really hard with us on that issue. But in Minnesota's EMS system, I think as we look, and the one thing I think we all know is whether it's education, the big healthcare systems have been doing a lot of work around these academies and training for years. And we're lucky in Minnesota that there's a really good correlation. And I think about Mr. Meyer from Sanford. We know Sanford's a bigger healthcare system. I think Tim was here today to say without the rural ones side by side, the smaller ones, North Memorial, Alina, we all can't take over everybody in the state. But we still are seeing a migration of some of these services just shifting. So I think to Representative Zalesnikar's earlier bill around the funding pool, that's important for our smaller operations. And why that amendment adopted to her bill really focused on those size ambulance services. And when we get to the bigger healthcare system ambulances in large areas, the Medicaid rates are important. That raises the boat for everybody across the state, I know there's conversations at the legislature with the hospital program and other ways to bring in money, and we really wanted to work and be in a conversation on how we do that, because for larger volume systems and why that bill exempted Rochester, Duluth, the Metro, and some of the bigger systems is there is different ways by volume we can generate revenue, where Representative Backer's area is only going to do so many runs a year, and he needs that type of financial support. So we're bringing this forward this year to try to do something with the Medicaid rates. Obviously, we know Medicare is a different conversation, but when we look at non-emergency transportation, 90-plus percent of that group is all on Medicaid. We're seeing 82 to 85% payer mixes now for Medicare and Medicaid in rural Minnesota. So 8 to 9 out of every 10 runs we go on, it's paid at half of what the cost is to operate it, why you're seeing the testimony around subsidy. And I think Representative Hewitt, you're spot on. When government money gets involved, there's some government oversight. And I think we saw that last year with the CMS funding bill also, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public that would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony and open it up to member questions and discussion. And we'll start with Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifiers, I've always stumbled with this because I think we did a study on Representative Backer, Chair Backer's area, when we were going through the task force. And if we took his volume of runs and charged what it would cost us to run two full-time EMTs out there, each of the people, the bill would have to be $9,800, and that was a year ago, for a run. And we all know that that's dreaming, right? And so when we always base something on percentage or on volume, that's what this is, because in the ambulance world, unless that patient's in the truck and that truck's moving, that company doesn't get paid. And that's why, again, and maybe this is more of a statement today, that I get where we're going with this. This is something, this is a bandage, maybe not even that. But we really got to look at what we pay for readiness. And Representative Zlicikar's bill was right there. There are all those bills that are going to come down. And I get this. I know Representative Backer's area is getting anything they can. They're doing pancake breakfast and stuff. But I think we keep barking up this tree, but we really have to look at what's right in front of us, and that's we have to fund it. And I think it's more than just a 10% increase on 100 runs a year. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Backer.
Yeah, you know, of all the bills, I mean, the bills today is really a full package. We're talking about training. House File 337 really focuses on Greater Minnesota. That is a difficult bill. At the same time, of all the bills, you're right. You know, House File 715, we get 120 runs at a 10% increase. I'm not getting another full-time EMT. Okay, we know that. Where House File 337 helps us to address that. Do we want to see a rate increase in a different fee area? What we have to ask is, if you're water skiing on Lake Travers and a skier has a heart attack, do you want the ambulance to show up? That was one of my first runs. 33-year-old gentleman, water skiing, has a heart attack. That was a difficult run. So it's a whole package. So I would agree with you, Representative Hewitt. Just raising the rates helped the big hospitals. And there's nothing wrong to help them because we need them for transfers. But we have to weave our webs correctly and so forth. So that's why we're going to have some additional discussions, especially on House File 337, how we can do that. Because at the end of the day, I see EMS as a public service, and that's what government's here for.
Thank you. Representative Hewitt, any follow-up? Are you good?
No, I already lectured. We're good.
All right. Thank you. Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Mr. McAlpin's comment about how people in rural Minnesota often are on medical assistance and how important all this is. And I think there is In this committee, there's obviously a lot of consensus around the need to provide these services, no question about it, and I appreciate Chair Backer, your leadership on this issue. But the comment really reminded me, I've been hearing that in Congress and the Republican House that they're seriously considering major cuts to medical assistance. And I just wonder if, I haven't followed this very closely, and I'm just wondering if the these services are on the chopping block. Does Mr. McAlpin, maybe you follow that more closely, maybe you're aware, are we at risk of having the feds cut medical assistance, Medicaid money? Because they do pay, I think, 50, at least, you know, for many services, 50% of what we spend comes from the feds.
Representative Backer, Mr. McAlpin.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Levine, I think you're spot on. We worry about that every day. We watch that. The American Ambulance Association is currently working on extending what's called Medicare extenders, which is a 25-cent increase, or 25% increase to the base of rural ambulances. That was extended through, I believe, April 1st. It comes up here pretty quick to expire. So besides anything that actually would cut that would be devastating to the ambulance industry.
Yeah.
Not to mention the healthcare industry, right?
Yeah.
Representative Liebling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. I think all of us probably, and I, as I say, I really haven't followed that too closely, that particular issue, but it probably would behoove us to be doing that because we will all be in serious world of hurt. All of our constituencies will be in a serious world of hurt if big cuts happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All right, Representative Backer, will you please close on your bill?
Yeah, thank you. You know, we've not seen an increase since 2016, and this will be part of the discussion here this session. And thank you for everybody's time today on such an important issue as EMS.
Thank you, members. House File 715, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And seeing no further business before the committee, our next hearing is Wednesday, February 26th, and we are adjourned.